much more in the short term? Could we afford to delay other tasks to spend time on new weapons? At the moment, the most important task for me was proving the X was going to do its job. After walking down the ramp, I went to where Sheila and I had cut our first tree. Lots of the young growth pines and oaks were the correct size, about 6 inches across and maybe 20 to 30 feet tall. I walked up to one that looked relatively straight as I stretched the morning stiffness out of my shoulders. There was a rustle of movement in the bushes beside the tree, and my heart leapt into my throat. I dropped my axe and then pointed my spear as my body flooded with adrenaline. Almost as soon as I prepared to defend myself, a small brown bird hopped out, squawked at me, and then took to the air. I let out a long sigh of relief and then bent down to pick up my axe. I chuckled at being scared of what was basically a happy little robin while I gave the axe one last check. The wooden handle was 3 feet long, with a flat rock wedged through the slot near the tip. The stone blade stuck out a little on the one side and had about 5 inches of cutting surface on the business side. I made a few practice swings in the air, and the axe's weight felt really good in my hand. I lined up the first chop and mentally prepared myself for the same kind of pain I felt when I used the hand axe rock. I also scanned the surrounding forest just to ensure nothing was going to jump out when I made some noise. After taking one last look at the trunk of my target, I made my first sidearm swing.
Holy shit!
I yelled as quietly as I could. The pain wasn't nearly as severe as with the hand axe rock, but my hands weren't recovered, so I set the axe down after a few swings to massage my aching fingers. After a few dozen seconds, I thought of Sheila's ability to ignore pain, and I picked the tool back up to continue my work. I swung the axe again and blocked out any pain from my already bruised hands. There was no question it was a ton better than holding a cutting stone like yesterday. It took about 10 minutes, but the familiar cracks of the falling tree soon made me forget the pain.
Hell yeah!
I said to myself as the tree fell over. An hour-long torture session was now a 10-minute walk in the woods. There was no way to drag the tree to the construction site on my own, so I got to work on cutting the second one. Each chop came with a little pain, but it made all the difference to see those trees fall over after only 8 or 10 minutes of effort. The new tool was way more efficient. I was dismayed that I owed a lot of our progress to Trell. Even though she claimed not to care, she somehow found the perfect rock to make this all possible. I would love to have her on our team, but her cooperation seemed less likely every time I spoke with her. The aliens must have brought me here to get challenged at every turn, even by my supposed allies. I'd gotten through my fifth tree when I heard a distinctive dinosaur roar rip through the morning silence of the redwood grove.
"Time to go home," I declared in a whisper.
The roar was the same as the guttural trumpet we heard at the lake. I cocked my head to get a bearing on the source, and then let out a gasp when another raging growl filled the forest. The noise came from the direction Sheila went to get water. I kept my axe and picked up my spear before running the 20 or 30 yards back to the ramp. I had an irrational fear something was coming up behind me, so I checked over my shoulder the whole way. I also mouthed the word fuck about 100 times while I ran. Another roar lasted a full 10 seconds, and it seemed a lot louder than before. That made me sprint even faster, and I nearly fell over when I tripped over the first part of the ramp slope. When I regained my wits and was sure nothing was going to grab me, I forced myself to stand there so I could keep an eye out for Sheila.
"Come on, Sheila, where the hell are you?"
I said in a low voice as I waited for the redwood forest to cough up my friend. 60 seconds later, she was still nowhere in sight, and I was losing my sanity.
Fuck! Why wasn't she coming? If that roar didn't get her to drop the water and sprint home, I didn't think anything would.
I had half a mind to run out into the grove after her, but the idea sped right past Brave and into suicidal territory. Each passing second I didn't see her, though, the idea seemed better and better. Another primal bellow tore through the air from out where Sheila was supposed to be. Despite the risks, I was coming to terms with the crazy idea of going after her. My vision narrowed as I contemplated which way I was going to run. While I stood there, death gripping both my weapons, Jinx hopped down the ramp behind me. He made an odd clicking sound with his beak, and I guessed he was trying to warn me of the giant fucking dinosaurs.
"Go back inside," I commanded him, and the bird skidded to a halt so that he could obey me.
He ran back up the ramp toward the cave, and I turned back to wait impatiently for the warrior woman.
"Sheila!"
I cried out, though not loud enough to be heard very far. I wanted to scream for her, but that was just as dumb as running toward the sounds of the terrible lizards.
Fuck this, I'm going, I said out loud. But I only took a couple steps when I caught sight of the feline woman fast approaching from my right. I could tell by the way she ran that the water containers were filled. She wasn't sprinting, but her power walk was almost as fast as my run. I ran a few more steps in her direction, but stopped to let her come to me. She constantly looked over her shoulder, just as I had done a minute before, so I waved my axe to keep her focused on me. Another roar shook the ground with a deep, gnarly rumble, and Sheila somehow sped up to a full run to cover the last 50 feet between us. A few heartbeats later, a second howl replied from elsewhere in the forest.
Hurry!
I said when Sheila was only 10 feet away. She remained grim-faced as she crossed the last few yards, but she smiled when she got next to me. Sweat soaked her body as if she'd finally found an activity that forced her to exert herself.
Thank God you made it! Let's get inside! I ordered when she was jogging by. I reversed my way to the ramp without turning my back toward the redwood grove. I was convinced the dinosaurs were closer than they sounded, but I still didn't see anything. Finally, I ran up the ramp after her. Galmine had been waiting at the gate, and the pair of women pulled it closed after I ran into the cave. Trell was also nearby and stood in spider mode using all of her legs, almost like she'd been in a defensive stance. Without thinking about it, I wrapped my arms around Sheila in a tight bear hug. She was still breathing hard, so I quickly let her go. When we separated, I briefly saw that strange glow in her eyes once again.
"I'm happy to see you safe, Sheila," I said while she stood in front of me.
"Well, I'm happy to see you, too. Thank you for watching out for me."
The glow in her eyes was gone, but her feline smile reinforced her words. More roars echoed from outside, and we all froze to listen. Sheila moved the instant it stopped and went right to the tree barrier with her spear in hand.
"They seem to be calling to each other,"
Sheila volunteered after a few moments of peering through the branches of the tree protecting our entrance.
"Or they're looking for something," I replied. I took off my hat and wiped my brow, while also forcing my heart rate back down to normal. The pause helped me think.
"So what the hell are they?
Did they follow you? Are you hurt?"
I tried to think of all the questions a good leader would ask. The beast sounded a lot like the apex predator that chased us from the lake.
"It was a giant dinosaur, with an ugly head, short arms, and a long lizard tail,"
Sheila said while getting close to catching her breath.
"I would guess it to be 15 feet tall, with teeth more vicious than anything we've seen."
She'd killed the massive crocodile who tried to eat me, so the thought of Sheila being scared of another dinosaur gave me a tremor of fear. Had she seen a T-Rex?
I didn't know a ton about dinosaurs, but I recalled them being a lot taller than 12 feet. Then again, the T-Rex wasn't the only predator in dinosaur times. There might be thousands of smaller or even larger predator species.
"Were they after you?"
I asked in an anxious voice. I hated the thought of something hunting my friend.
"No," Sheila replied. "I hid inside the giant fallen tree while it walked down the stream. It did double back like it found a scent, but it eventually went away. I took a long way back to the cave, intending to lessen the chance it would pick up my trail. However, I passed near a second beast that was very similar to the first. It seemed to pursue its friend."
She was already calmer than I was, despite having seen two of the bastards.
"Were they working together?" I asked. "Maybe they were mates."
"Perhaps,"
Sheila replied as she momentarily turned away from the turnstile.
"Both were gray, but the second one had a bright red streak along its back and head."
"Were they looking for the trikes?"
I searched for any answer that would explain why they were there, besides hunting for us.
"We have no way of knowing,"
Sheila responded in her usual calm voice. "The search for food seems most likely, though.
In my experience, predators remain at rest until they're on the hunt."
Though we'd only talked for a handful of minutes, her breathing was back to normal. That was the level of fitness I needed to develop. Trell clacked her chitinous claws to get our attention.
"See? When there are real emergencies, you always return to the cave,"
Trell stated matter-of-factly.
"Do I need to rehash it all again, why we should stay here?"
I was almost never in the mood to tangle with her, and this was no exception. Sheila was nearly hunted down, monsters were roaming the grove, and the bird countdown never stopped ticking.
I was happy no one else rose to meet her challenge either. That probably pissed her off more than if I'd said something snarky. She sighed heavily when she realized I wasn't going to reply, and then she strolled back to her nook.
"You know I'm right,"
Trell said as a final poke in my eye before sliding her partition closed. Trell's rants always had grains of truth to them. We did use the cave as a fallback place of safety, but that's why we needed the fort as another refuge. Where would we go if the cave was overrun with those orange birds and the predators were waiting out front? Those raptors had nearly found us, and their presence beside our home changed my whole planning matrix. Making a comfy bed fell completely off the list. Bows and arrows moved right up to the top. As far as weapons go, they were the easiest to envision. Though if battling large carnivores was in our future, we'd need to master the ballista, catapult, or something with more of a punch. The three of us froze again at the sound of another roar. I held my breath for those few seconds, but let it out when it was obvious the dinosaurs were not getting any closer.
"I think they are going back to the lake. That is the direction they were headed when I last saw them,"
Sheila added as she looked beyond the turnstile jammed in the door. Hiding in the cave wasn't a long-term option because of all the shit which needed to get done outside. But if I took comfort in anything, it was that those giant predators couldn't hope to sneak up on us. The second the roars were far enough away, we had to get back out there, and my heart rate quickened at what I was about to suggest. "Sheila, let me know when things calm down outside. We both have to go out and get a few things," I said while standing at the gate with her. Nothing was visible in the grove below us, and the roars were much reduced in volume, but we had to be certain. I shared my thoughts to help calm my nerves. "I have a job for you," I said as I pointed to the axe blade. "I want you to find more rocks like this so we can make more axes. I got 5 trees down while you were at the stream, but my blade is now very dull. If you have a second one, I bet we have one wall built by the end of tomorrow. If we have 10 of them, we won't have to worry about sharpening axes during the workday."
"I can do that,"
Sheila said simply. "Unless you think Trell is hoarding more, you'll have to search among the rocks outside our cave," I advised her. To my surprise, Trell didn't use the opportunity to snipe back at me, which suggested she was still pissed, or had no more rocks. Hell, I'd kiss the mean spider woman if she revealed a stash of axe blades that would eliminate the need to go outside to look for one. Sheila shook her head no, but also smiled a tiny bit. "Then I'll go out with you," I continued. "The second it's clear, we'll scrounge around for what we need. You get at least one rock, and I'll get another axe handle. We can come back in here and make the axe until we're absolutely sure we can return to chopping wood out in the grove." We waited for 10 minutes as the roars faded into the distance. Sheila's hearing seemed superior to mine, and she claimed she could still hear them even after I could not. She gave me a nod half a minute later, and I cleared my throat. "They're far enough away to make a fast sweep outside," I said as I pointed out the door. "We should hear them coming if they decide to return." Galmine helped us push the tree barrier from the door, and Sheila and I ran down the ramp. She carried her spear, and I carried my axe in my left hand and my own spear in my right. "I'll be right over here in these trees," I called to Sheila as she started searching some of the rock piles near the base of the ramp.
"I will listen for danger,"
Sheila replied in her neutral voice. I was scared shitless something was going to swoop in and grab me, but she seemed immune to fear. That was another skill I needed to acquire. I went right to where I'd already been cutting, and found the proper-sized branch on the same tree where I'd gotten the first axe handle. It only took a few minutes to cut the 3-foot length with the new axe, but I didn't see another that would make for a proper handle. I jogged right back to where Sheila was still searching for rocks. It didn't look like she'd found the right stone yet, so I waited nearby to guard her. I needed to say something to stay occupied.
"I'm so glad you're okay, Sheila. I don't know what I'd do,"
I said before she interrupted me.
"Thank you, Victor," she replied. "I was never in real danger."
She picked up a rock that was the shape we needed, but it must have had something wrong with it because she dropped it back to the ground.
"Yeah, well," I began. "I'll always worry about you out there. I worry about all of us. But you do a lot of the dangerous work. I have to keep giving you the hard jobs until we have more help."
"Until we find more abductees on this world,"
Sheila answered. I was thinking of Trell. I nudged my head toward the cave. However, Sheila presented a new possibility. "My friends from the beach died before we could all escape, but were there others out in the woods waiting to be found? If so, Finding help out there might be easier than coaxing Trell into becoming a team player. Have you seen others? I added as an afterthought. I stood with my axe and spear like the castle guard on duty, but I also searched the nearby rocks to see if I could find what we needed and get us out of there.
No, but they come from fingers of light in the sky. Galmine and Trell both appeared after I saw their beams. I found you because I was heading toward lights I saw in your direction, but they've not reappeared since then.
I picked up a rock that had the proportions we needed and showed Sheila.
A little too big, Victor, but set it aside, she advised. We can use it if we're desperate.
You think the lights mean more people are being dropped to the surface? I asked while chucking the rock just to the side of the path. I then peered out into the grove, worried that I'd taken my eyes off the forest for too many seconds.
Yes,
Sheila said simply. I don't remember how I arrived, I said. I can't recall anything of the trip down or any lights. I tried to help her find the perfect rock, but I was constantly distracted by shrieks and calls that I figured were just birds. We were there for another 5 minutes before Sheila stepped out from the bushes.
This is the one.
She held up a rock almost identical to the gray stone Trell had given us. It was wedge-shaped and tapered to one side as if it was intended to be an axe blade.
Would you like me to gather others?
There were no threats anywhere that I could see, but I wanted to get back to the safety of the cave. Having more rocks would be great, but finding them would require additional time outdoors. I anxiously shifted on my feet for a few moments before deciding. Yeah, but I don't like the feel out here. We'll come outside again when things are back to their normal level of scariness. I acted like an usher and motioned her up the ramp. She wasted no time arguing, but she did grab the larger rock that I'd tossed down. I followed her up the ramp and into the cave with only a single look back over my shoulder. Once we got settled in and working on our projects, my heart rate and imagination came down from the upper atmosphere. We hadn't encountered any apex predators so far. It was just bad timing the carnivores appeared when Sheila was at the stream getting water. Minutes later, with the coals burning on my new wooden handle, I let out a long, satisfying sigh. Sheila was already chipping her new axe blade, but she stopped as if knowing I was going to say something. I read her steady golden eyes, and knew what a leader would say. As long as we don't hear the big ones again, Sheila and I will return to the grove in the afternoon and cut more wood. The birds are coming, so we can't stop a project unless the big dinosaurs are right at our door. I laughed to let them know I wasn't afraid. I was so thankful we had enough leftover fish and water at that moment so we could focus on the big project. So as soon as we get this extra axe done, we'll head out. Both women smiled to acknowledge my statement and then got back to work. Even though I got up about 100 times to check the ramp leading up to our cave over the next 2 hours, I also found the time to burn a hole clear through the handle. Sheila shaped, sharpened, and polished the stone in the same time I used for the wood-burning project. I gave her my contribution and then stood by the turnstile while she hardened the wood, slid in the blade, and tapped it home. It took about 2 hours of labor, but the end result was well worth it. We stood next to each other, holding our matching axes, and I felt ready to take on the world. Galmine cooked more bird and a bit of fish as we finished up the second axe. I was happy to have some more calories for the afternoon of cutting ahead of us, but it was another ticking clock in my life. At some point, we needed to put the fort project on hold and restock our food. It would be 10 million times easier if Galmine or Trell could go out and take care of that for us, but I could only do the best with the assets I had. I thought once more about Heracula, Kelg, and the other dead man, and how great it would be if they were here. But then I imagined what I'd do if my feline friend wasn't around and realized it could always be worse. This is going to be awesome, Sheila. We're going to clear this whole forest. I laughed as we stood together and picked our spears. I was inwardly nervous to go outside and leave the safety of the ramp, but I was happy she and I were going to be working right next to each other.
I'm ready, she said, as if I was about to open the door to battle.
We pushed out the turnstile and once again emerged from our safe little cave. The heat hit me like I'd walked into a sauna, and I thought back to the humidity of the morning from the overnight rain. I had more sweating to do, but that hardly bothered me because I didn't hear those carnivorous dinosaurs. Anything out there? I said to Sheila, knowing she was listening for predators.
No? We are safe. For now, she counseled.
I almost joked that there were a million other threats on a planet loaded with prehistoric monsters, but stopped myself because that wouldn't be helpful. Instead, I took the first steps down the ramp. We walked warily to the clump of trees I'd cut, which gave Sheila a chance to see how much progress I'd made.
"You cut all these down?"
Sheila asked.
"This is gonna go much faster with two axes."
"Let's drag these over to the construction site so we can use them to create an outline of the fort," I suggested while I pointed to where we already stashed that first tree. Before we cut a bunch more trees, I wanted to see how things were gonna lay out. It was how my mind operated when in empire building mode. Over the next hour, we dragged each of the downed trees to the job site. We stuffed our spears into the branches as we moved them, but this time we also hooked our axes on the same trees as extra insurance. Gradually, our heightened vigilance fell back to normal alertness so we could focus on our jobs. It took time to cut off the branches and tops of each 20-footer to make the poles somewhat long and straight. We dumped the odd-shaped extra wood in a pile on the back side of the giant sequoia. If we left it there long enough, it would dry out and be useful for firewood. I used a stick to hack down ferns and other plants next to the trunk of our home redwood. I chose an area just to the left of the tree, as seen from the cave, so that the two sites were about 40 yards from each other and in direct line of sight. When I was done getting it ready, we had the perfect flat space to build. "Our best bet is to have three walls of logs," I said while surveying the tree trunks lying next to our chosen redwood. "I think we talked about using the giant trunk as a corner, but look how big it is. We can use it as the whole wall." We rearranged three logs into the shape I needed. When we were done, we had created a 20-by-20 enclosure with three logs joined by the fourth wall of the tree itself. We'd have to work out a door, but it became apparent how we would build our new camp. "We'll be able to lean logs right up against the tree to make our living space," I said as if I managed a construction site. "We'll be shielded completely from wind and rain coming from that side." I pointed to the right of the tree.
"It is a very good design, Victor," Sheila replied.
I would have felt better if I could get Trell out to look it over before we started. She was the real architect, and her approval could potentially save a lot of wasted effort. But without her, we had to do the best we could. I moved the logs on the ground a few more times to account for how we would join the corners. We were going to try to link them like a log cabin, but it was hard to plan that out without a sketch pad or even some dust to draw crude lines. We talked about making the square into a hexagon so the walls would be shorter and easier to cut, but neither of us could say for sure which was more efficient.
"My people always build rectangles," Sheila said after we'd moved one of the logs for the fifth time. "It seems the easiest shape for our limited cutting options."
That's what it all came down to. There were probably smarter ways of doing it, but there were plenty of trees of the correct height for making 20-foot logs. If we made the walls shorter, we'd waste more of the trees and would have to cut down even greater numbers of them. We'd struck the perfect balance. "That works for me," I said. "A rectangle it is." I was happy to have the plan written in stone, and we moved the example walls one last time so that we had our final square.
"Come and get some water,"
Galmine cheerfully chirped from midway down the ramp. I glanced quickly at my silver-haired friend and then turned to check the grove to ensure nothing was going to come out and grab her. When I saw it was still safe, I pulled off my hat to air my head. The blazing sun beat down on my exposed head, and I swallowed once in response to seeing the small water pot she held in her hands.
"I admit, she's come at just the right time," Sheila said.
She wasn't dripping sweat as much as me, but that wasn't saying much. Yesterday I'd ripped off my long-sleeved shirt to keep cool, but there was no beating the saturating humidity. "I didn't think you ever complained," I said with a smile.
"It's not a complaint. It is a statement of fact," Sheila said while trying to stay serious.
I patted my hat onto my head before we grabbed spears and axes and walked toward Galmine. I watched all around for animals, but couldn't help noticing Sheila was hiding a prim smile.
"So you do have a sense of humor."
"Your secret is safe with me," I told her with exaggerated stealth. She was usually so serious I began to wonder if she had a sense of humor at all. When we reached Galmine, the rock woman seemed to know Sheila and I were playing around.
"You two are glowing,"
Galmine said with both happiness and accusation.
"Just like two lovers keeping secrets."
She winked at me, but also smiled broadly at Sheila.
"Please stop. You know I'm married. Victor and I were speaking of our desire for what is inside that clay container."
Sheila pointed at the old clay water pot. Married, yes, the rock woman answered, but there is something in your eyes.
You're acting very silly. May I have the water?
Sheila sounded overly serious, as if she really wanted to change the subject. While Sheila took a swig, I tried to think of something to distract my green-eyed friend. Galmine, what are you working on inside?
I ripped up all the leaves I could find. We'll need more so we can keep creating cord. Can you get some more?
And, dearest Victor, while you're out, perhaps you could get me some more fish and a bucket of clay. I want to stay busy like you two love birds.
Galmine giggled and flashed her bright white teeth. I tried to ignore her playfulness because she'd hit on something deadly serious. Part of managing this project was keeping the workers occupied in every waking moment. She was going to be out of chores and thus doing nothing to help our momentum. There were actually going to be two people sitting idly inside the cave if I didn't get Galmine more leaves to work on, or axes to sharpen, or clay to make pots, or food to cook. I had to keep her busy or I'd be wasting a resource. I considered a reply as I took a drink from the clay container. I'd worked on our primary project for a very short time today, but we still had the entire afternoon and evening of hard outdoor labor. We did so much sweating I was pretty sure we'd need a second water run to go with all our other problems. My heart skipped a few beats just thinking about it. The cave opening was right there, which gave me an idea.
I want you to save, but will you wait outside the cave for a few minutes?
I want to talk alone to Trell to see if she'll work with us. I didn't want my friends outside where danger was lurking, but I wanted to see if I could appeal to Trell with a private conversation.
I fear she will not, Victor, as long as she believes help is on the way,
Sheila replied.
I do love her hopeful spirit,
Galmine added as I handed the water back to her.
And I thought as she did for some time, but each day I think that less and less.
Yeah, I probably lost that hope about 10 minutes after I saw the two moons, I admitted. I could be brutally honest with myself and admit humanity would never find a way to reach me. Even if someone back home knew I was gone, they'd have no way to cross the stars to retrieve me. Never mind that a glorified dog catcher wasn't worth the resources necessary for an interstellar rescue.
The beings who took us seem very powerful,
the green-eyed woman said as a final thought to our exchange. I smiled the last time at my friends and then spun to head up the ramp. I paused just before I entered the cave to consider my options with Trell. The other two women both seemed to accept the overwhelming hopelessness of our abduction and deposit on this world, but Trell did not. So I needed a way to convince her. That gave me a nugget of an idea, but I would have to work it all out once I spoke to her. I went into the cave, intending to call Trell out of her nook, but halted when I realized she was already standing at the fire on just her human legs. I also caught a flash of motion behind her as Jinx bounced onto his woodpile and went into what was fast becoming his home. I reoriented my eyes onto the winged woman to find her wearing a disapproving scowl.
You came in by yourself to win me over with your sappy male begging. Is that it?
Trell asked sarcastically. Something like that, I admitted. Though I do not beg. She glared at me with her dark, sinkhole eyes.
Well then, dear Victor, give it your best shot,
she said while waving her hand as if to allow me to approach her. I did step closer to the fire, but stopped before getting right where she pointed. It's true. I need your help. We have less than a month to build a huge structure, and the only person here who is an expert at construction is you. Every time you open your mouth to belittle or mock me, you somehow make my life easier. I'm tempted to go on letting you yell at me just so I can keep taking notes on your great ideas, but that takes time and energy. I'd rather have you at my side so we can work together. I spoke in an even and respectful voice. Trell looked behind me toward the cave door, and whatever she saw there seemed to satisfy her.
Did they tell you to talk to me?
She asked. No, they basically told me not to, I replied.
Then why are you here, male? When two women give you sage advice, I think you should take it,
she said in a scolding tone. Can I sit here? I asked in an effort to make our meeting a little less formal.
I cannot stop you, she replied.
Anger at her attitude overwhelmed me as I took a seat by the fire. I inhaled a calming breath and forced myself to say, thank you. I organized my thoughts and cobbled together a plan. I didn't think I could outsmart her, so I had to out-truth her. and the only way to do that was with logic. She wasn't going to be affected by emotional pleas like Galmine, nor would she be swayed with what was right in front of her like Sheila. I had to make it both personal and logical. "Do you mind if I ask what you were doing when you were abducted, Trell Edil Iria?"
"My private life is none of your business." "But how about this? What were you doing when you were taken, Mael? Were you creating a multi-step master plan to use the toilet?"
She let out a sarcastic laugh. "Shit. So much for personal." "No, I was taken while I was doing my job." I continued to breathe deep to keep myself from reacting to her insult. I had just collected a runaway snake from a pool party filled with gorgeous women. The aliens must have had a ship or something in the sky above me because they ripped me right out of the truck and off my world. For all I know, they took the truck, too. If that's true, no one on Earth knows I was taken. It saddened me to hear myself say it out loud. Sure, Beatrice might wonder where I was, but she'd probably be equally concerned with her missing truck. My parents were gone, and I had no family to speak of. Even Lacey would have no idea that I'd left her life forever. She'd probably just think I flaked out on coming back to her party. I must have gotten lost in thought because Trell coughed to get my attention. "Yeah, so, you should know that my planet is always on the lookout for aliens. It's like our world's hobby. We have satellites and radio telescopes pointed at the stars to try to find evidence that aliens are out there. We have huge militaries with warships and tanks and shit all over the planet. We..." She interrupted me.
"I'm anxious to find the end to your rambling," she said with an exasperated sigh.
"Right. The point is, even with all that technology, my planet could do nothing to stop the aliens, or even see them. They flew right through all those defenses and plucked me and my truck from one of the biggest cities on Earth, and I'm pretty sure we didn't fight back. We have rockets and shuttles, but nothing that could ever reach this place."
"I understand. But your primitive world sounds as backward as you are. My people are far more advanced. We have space yachts and trading partners across our star system. They will undoubtedly have tracked us to this world and are even now planning a rescue."
Trell spoke with her usual self-assurance. I almost envied that level of blind devotion to an idea as comforting as rescue. "Maybe. You could be right. And despite everything I say, I really do hope you get rescued. It would mean your people are in a different league than the aliens who are running this shitty experiment." She looked around the cave as if seeing something deeper than the rock walls surrounding us.
"When you first appeared and recognized the monsters outside were from your world, I figured you were responsible for all this. Lone, male, cocky, and wanting to take charge. Yet my superior intellect quickly figured out that was impossible if you are representative of your species."
Trell let out a light laugh, but then stopped when I only shrugged.
"But," she continued, "I admit that if this world were constructed by aliens and populated with these huge monsters culled from your backward planet, those builders would pose a formidable military challenge for my sisters. However, we have our secrets too. Though I don't trust you or them enough to share any."
She pointed to the cave wall to indicate she was talking about the aliens. "So your people can build entire worlds like this one?" I asked in a hopeful tone.
"I did not say that," she replied with annoyance.
"Can your people fly into the airspace of enemy worlds without being seen?"
"Victor, I did not say that," she stated dryly.
"I'm trying to figure out the difference between your technology and theirs. I admit, my world has a basic tech level far below yours. We can't cross the stars, for example. If you are way more advanced than us, I just have to wonder how the aliens got through your defenses undetected so they could take you. That's why I asked where you were when they got you. Maybe you were in a remote area like Sheila when she was snatched. It might explain how they got around your super-secret technology." I took a guess that Trell wasn't the kind of woman to go out on her own and be lost in nature like Sheila. If she was as powerful and important as she said she was, I expected her to live inside a bunker with multiple layers of guards and protection, especially if she had 10,000 males after her.
"Is that your point? To insult my world and those who would rescue me? If so, you found something else at which you excel."
She sounded disgusted. "No, not at all," I said with a sigh.
Why do you always read me wrong? I'm saying your world sounds way smarter than mine. Like 1,000 years smarter, at least. The human race can barely agree on the color of the sky. I laughed when I thought about how little my race knew about aliens or the galaxy. So traveling to the stars is pretty much impossible for us right now. It's painful to admit, but my people are never coming for me. I sighed at the truth of that statement, but pushed on to drive home my point. Sheila and Galmine both said their peoples lack spaceflight, so all our hopes are on you. I'm hopeful your sisters will blast in and save us, but I needed to know how sure you were that your people could overcome the aliens who swooped in, grabbed you, and ran without firing a shot. If I were ever going to risk my life by waiting in the cave with you, I would want to be absolutely certain your people would be here. Trell's dark eyes peered into mine. She was so beautiful it was tempting to look away, but I held her gaze to try to prove I wasn't there to grovel or beg. I think Trell was counting on me begging at some point, and maybe she was surprised I didn't.
"You would consider my recommendation?" she asked with clear disbelief. "I've been saying my sisters would rescue me since the beginning."
"That's what Sheila said. I felt like I had her right where I wanted her. And I figure you wouldn't risk your life unless you've looked logically at your chance of being rescued. I guess I really wanted to know what you thought."
"And you still don't believe me?"
she said defensively. "Look, you have no reason to accept I'm telling the truth when I say I believe you. I would love to be in your shoes. As I said, my people are absolutely not coming. I know it deep in my heart, yet I still leave some hope for a miracle. You, however, have a legitimate reason to think you will be rescued. I don't blame you for holding on to that until, well, forever." She did a double take.
"Oh, okay then. So you think as I do," Trell began. "That is a surprise, but a welcome one. Now, you see why you must stop your wasteful pursuits with Sheila and Galmine?"
It was the easy way out. I could sit in the relative safety of the cave until whatever was going to happen happened. We might die from nesting birds, giant crocs, or something as simple as starvation. Right up until the end, we could all sit around hoping for rescue. I wish I could, but ultimately it all comes down to living long enough to see those rescue ships. I don't know when your sisters will come, and we only have a few weeks until the orange birds try and take this cave.
You sound like Sheila. She has spent too much time in the company of males.
Her reply didn't have much of her normal snark. I felt like she had at least considered my words. It was pretty obvious by her own logic that her people weren't as advanced as the aliens, and that rescue was far from a sure thing. I stood up, signaling my desire to get back to work. "Trell, I would love to work with you. Everything you touch gets improved. Please consider becoming more involved with our project until your rescue arrives. You can even stay inside the cave if you want. We just need..." I said before she held up her hand to cut me off.
"So, it finally comes out. You are here to beg and flatter after all. Here's a better idea. Why don't you get involved in my award-winning project called Waiting for Rescue? Or just run off into the woods and die? I don't care. You've been nothing but an annoyance since you've interrupted my life."
She waved her hand dismissively. I was tempted to lob something verbally in return, but I'd made a huge amount of progress talking back and forth. It was by far our longest conversation, and the one with the fewest insults. Not zero insults, but fewer than normal. I couldn't throw all that away to make myself feel better.
"I'm done with this,"
she said with nearly a growl after I didn't leave immediately. "I hear you. But there is one more thing I have to say before I get the other women," I said in a sympathetic voice. It was clear I'd won our battle, but I also had to win the war. "I'm not the selfish person you think I am, Trell. I listen to all advice and use what works best, no matter who had the idea. That's why we're using your axe blade, twisting your cords, and building with logs lying on their sides, as you suggested. But I'll go the extra mile for you and promise that once we have the fort built, I'll personally help you stockpile food and water in the cave. Maybe you can outlast the birds, I don't know. But I won't leave anyone to die. Not ever." I turned around and walked out before she could reply. It was probably going to be another insult anyway.
When I emerged in the light of the afternoon, it felt like I'd returned to the real world. Numerous clocks continued to count down, and more tasks piled up. My blood pressure spiked as all my problems flooded back in. Galmai needed something to do, Sheila and I needed to get back to cutting, and distant roars reminded me of the stakes. The two women looked at me with anticipation after my big talk with Trell. Was it best to tell them I'd gotten nowhere? That wasn't exactly true. No matter how much Trell pretended to believe rescue was imminent, she was too smart to ignore logic forever. I'd planted the seed of doubt in her web, while also purging the last inkling of the doubt from inside me. Nobody was coming. Long-term survival was our responsibility, and it was out of the hands of our homeworlds. Taking the next step on that journey was up to me. I took a deep breath of fresh air and felt the sun on my cheeks. I was alive and still playing whatever game this was called. As long as I could say that, I had the ability to help my new friends. "It's still just the three of us, and we have a mountain of work to do," I said to both of the beautiful women. "Let's get going." Chapter 11. Over the next 10 days, I had plenty of time to wonder if my private talk with Trell made any impact on her. At the time, I thought it was obvious that our chances of rescue were unlikely. But instead of realizing she needed to help us survive, she became even more of a recluse. While the rest of us struggled to make our new home, the Spider Woman spent most of her time sulking in her private quarters. Despite Trell's lack of support, we managed to make considerable progress on our fort over those 10 days. Sheila and I had spent a day lifting the last of the logs onto our walls, and now the shell of our new fort was nearly complete. I was confident we'd have everything finished well before those birds showed up, and I'd almost stopped stressing out about it. We needed to make a door and add a little section of roof, but after that, we'd be move-in ready. In some ways, I was amazed we'd gotten it done so fast. For every hour we spent constructing the fort, it seemed like we devoted another 2 hours to hiding. It wasn't unusual to spend short periods of time inside the cave while strange dinosaurs wandered through our grove. Even if they were peaceful herbivores grazing hundreds of yards away, I insisted we stay hidden until we were sure they were gone. That's when we got super motivated to carve new spears or sharpen the old ones. I was willing to suffer the lost time on the fort as long as we avoided attracting any sort of predators. But hiding wasn't the worst of it. To keep on living, we still had to leave the safety of our cave for our daily chores. Sheila and I started each day with a run to the stream, where we would fish, hunt, and forage for fruit and berries. We would bring it all back with refills of our water. This ate a good chunk of each morning, even if we didn't have to hide from dinosaurs or take long detours on our return trips. Galmine stayed as busy as Sheila and me. Each night we brought in the dull axes from a day of cutting, and she would spend her evening sharpening the blades. We found rocks of the correct shape so she could make new axe blades to replace any that broke. Every few days, we went back to the lake to collect clay for her so she could make more of the specialized water jugs. To top it all off, she'd rip leaves and wrap cord whenever we ran low out on the construction site. Sheila and I did most of our backbreaking labor in the afternoons. I'd worked out a loose plan to do the job in 3 phases. Phase 1 was chopping down 60 trees and then dragging each of them to the job site near the giant sequoia. I had figured each wall would need about 26-inch wide logs stacked on top of each other in order to make a 10-foot-tall barricade. It took us about 4 days to chop and drag them all. Phase 2 was stripping the branches off each of the fallen trees so we'd have somewhat straight logs for the walls. It was easier on the hands, but there were so many branches that it took another 3 days of mind-numbing work to get them prepared. We tossed all the trimmed-off wood in a huge pile behind our home sequoia tree, which gave us an appreciation of how much cutting we'd done. The final phase of the fort entailed stacking all the logs on top of each other and joining them together with our homemade cord. I'd planned to have the walls about 10 feet high so that large predators couldn't hop over them, but we had to stop at 7 feet because it became too hard to lift the heavy logs any higher. We built it to be a lot like a big log cabin without a full roof. Trell was absolutely correct about laying the logs one on top of the next, so we kept the digging and hammering of poles to a minimum. We did have to drive in a few smaller support posts on each side of our walls, but her way was much easier than trying to stick all the larger logs into the ground. I tried to compliment her for the design each day, but her replies often included heavier-than-usual amounts of insults. Now that it was nearly done, I planned to thank her at least one more time. "We can move in tomorrow," I said to Sheila while she rested near the corner of the 7-foot wall.
"Have you decided how to attach the fort to the big tree?"
Sheila replied. We used the sequoia as one of our four walls, but there was no way to join the other two walls directly to the thick bark of the giant tree. I had an idea to tie a rope to each side of the fort, and then loop it all the way around the base of the trunk as a support. However, it took me 30 paces to walk around the whole thing, meaning we needed over 100 feet of very strong rope. It would have taken us days to make one long enough. "We'll tie each wall to the roots," I said. "We can do that after we move in. We'll dig the holes together." I came up with several other ideas for bracing the walls against the redwood, including some rather crazy ones, like carving out stone nails to hold it all together. But after thinking about it for a few days, I realized I didn't have to tie a rope all the way around the trunk. I only needed to tie around a couple of strong roots. I dug a test hole and discovered the tree's roots were just below the surface.
"I admit, I'm glad we do not have to make all that rope," the sexy feline woman said in her steady voice. "However, we are going to have some hard work digging, so I suppose it all remains in balance."
"It's going to be super cool once we have this all done," I said. "The fort almost looks like it's a part of the redwood tree, don't you think?"
"Super cool. It is very hot, Victor."
Sheila looked to the sky as if to check the weather.
"No, in this case I used cool to mean something awesome," I said with laughter. "Our fort looks great."
I sure as hell wasn't suggesting anything on this world is a cool temperature, but I'd love to build us an air conditioning system once we complete the hot part of the fort.
"Do you think it ever gets cold here?"
Sheila replied as she looked over the hot and dusty worksite. "I honestly have no idea," I answered. "I think dinosaurs lived on Earth in a time when it was much warmer than I'm used to, so maybe the aliens cut and pasted the climate, too? I do know that jungles generally don't get snow where I come from." I looked at the big tree next to us. "But the redwoods of California do get snow from time to time. Maybe the aliens can make it snow on us here in the grove, but keep it hot at the jungle lake?" I laughed. There was no reason to believe they couldn't.
"We have cold periods on my planet, but it very rarely snows where I live," Sheila said. "If our lives did not depend on finding plant and animal life to survive, and we had the proper shelter to keep us warm, I think I would enjoy watching peaceful snow in this place."
"Yeah, I think so too. I'd take almost anything over this oppressive heat." I wiped my brow with my forearm at the mere mention of being hot and sweaty. The high pines of the towering redwoods provided quite a bit of shade, but did little for the humidity.
"Tomorrow we will build the door, anchor it, and then move in?" she asked while pointing to the opening at the corner.
Since Trell refused to help, I had to think of how to make a door without massively complicating our simple little fort. If I put it in the middle of one of the 20-foot-long walls, like a typical log cabin, we'd have to spend all kinds of time cutting it out. It seemed a lot easier to put the opening on the inside corner of the fort, next to the redwood, so there was no cutting involved. All we needed was a bunch of straight pieces of wood to build a door, and I'd already found what I needed on a nearby cedar tree.
"Yep," I said. "You took little time to think about it, which is unusual," she said with a slight smile. "Are you sure?"
Sheila and I had worked closely on the fort since day one, and I come to appreciate her dry sense of humor. The cutting, pulling, and stacking was backbreaking labor and left me completely and utterly dead each night. But it was made bearable because she saw the positive in most things and always seemed to nudge my spirits when they were low. I'd been saying we can move in tomorrow for a few days now because problems kept delaying the big event. "Yes, I think tomorrow we will finally, without a doubt, move in," I declared. "I want to use a bunch of straight cedar branches so it is extra strong. I saw one of those trees down the hillside, so we'll just have to cut the branches off." Sheila and I had been talking about the door ever since we set the wall back a couple of feet from the tree, but there was no point cutting it down until we were ready for it. I'd been saving it kind of as a celebratory final piece of our fort empire.
"Your fort looks pathetic, Victor,"
Trell said just loud enough to be heard from 40 yards away as she stood near the top of the ramp. She loved to pop out of the cave every so often to critique my work. "I was beginning to think she'd forgotten about me today," I said in a muffled voice to Sheila. It was already a late afternoon, and Trell hadn't said a word since the start of the day. But that was fine, because her complaints were getting repetitive and less creative. I was tempted to shout back and ask Trell why her sisters weren't showing up, but even though she had it coming, it would have been a douchey move to rub it in her face.
"Do not worry about her," Sheila replied. "I think your fort looks great."
"Our fort," I corrected her. I'd been planning for and building the fort almost every waking moment for 10 days, but I couldn't have done it without her and Galmine.
"Hi, guys!"
Galmine called from her spot next to Trell. She spent a lot of time at the top of the ramp, acting as our lookout and water supplier. Her cheerleader-like support was an extra benefit to having her around, and it was the Rock Woman's little way of countering Trell's negative vibes. I waved back to her and couldn't help but smile approvingly. "All right, Sheila," I said as I pointed back into the forest. "Let's go get that door built while there is still time in the day. If we're lucky, we can get it attached tonight, and then we can work on the hut tomorrow and move in before nightfall."
"Well, I will see it when I believe it," she said,
flubbing one of the phrases she'd heard me say recently. "Follow me," I replied as I snagged my axe and spear. Carrying both weapons was now second nature everywhere we went. I still wanted to craft a bow and arrow, but there was no time for new projects until the fort was off our plate. Sheila had also mentioned creating slings, improved rock-tipped spears, crossbows, and something called an atlatl. We couldn't decide if that last one was a real word or something the translator couldn't convert from her language, but she described it as a piece of wood you held in your hand to better throw spears. We walked about 100 yards along the base of the hill until we reached a patch of green cedars standing together a little up the slope. I guided Sheila to the large cedar tree I'd found earlier, and we stood under the ladder-like branches so I could point out the correct size I wanted for the door. "Those branches are all perfectly straight and about as thick as my arm," I explained while pointing to my targets about 10 feet up. "We'll cut a bunch down and tie them together."
"I trust you to see pieces of a door up there,"
Sheila said in such a way I was unable to tell if it was a joke or her being serious. "Hold my spear," I said while handing it to her. I jammed my axe handle inside my belt so it wouldn't fall out during my ascent. Then I grabbed the first branch just over my head and pulled myself up. From there, I was able to shimmy the rest of the way into the limbs. I was surprised by how easy the climb was. 10 days of axe swinging had given me a little extra muscle to pull off the climb without complaint. That made me think about my stats. It was fucking weird to think of myself as a character inside a game, but the alien somehow translated my strength and movement into statistics, so maybe the values changed since I discovered them. I pulled up the IQ and tapped on my name. Strength, 4. Stamina, 2. Movement, 3. Special skill, tame, level 2. Hell yeah! Just like going to the gym, the hard work eventually paid off. My strength had gone from a 3 to a 4, but I didn't know what my player character stats meant in real life. I didn't feel any stronger, but climbing this same tree back on Earth would definitely have been harder. Would I have to run a marathon to get my movement stat to go up? I hung in the tree and paged through the IQ until I remembered my mission. I pulled out my axe and checked below to see if Sheila was clear of falling debris. I was surprised to see her smiling back up at me. "What is it? Is my underwear showing?" I called down.
"No. Well, it is a little," she said matter-of-factly. "But I was only noting how your muscles have improved since I first met you. You are no longer as weak as you used to be. I like that."
"The 4 instantly pays off," I whispered to myself. I was thankful I wasn't getting weaker, but I did find it a little embarrassing she'd noticed my unhealthy strength 3 condition in the first place. Instead of an active lifestyle back home, I'd excelled at fast food, driving my car to work, driving my truck at work, and then coming home to spend hours a day in my gaming chair. I still had my natural muscle tone from playing soccer in high school, chasing animals around backyards, and doing a little surfing, but I'd come to Dinosaur Land looking a bit out of shape.
"What does the number 4?
Sheila started to say. She whipped her head to look at something up the hill. She crouched with her spear in hand and took a few tentative steps forward. I couldn't see anything beyond the dense canopy of the cedar. "What is it?" I asked a moment later.
"You have to see this,"
Sheila said in an insistent voice. I hopped to the next lowest branch, then I dropped the final 6 feet with a heavy thump on the ground.
I stood up just in time to catch the spear Sheila had tossed to me. "What's happening?" I asked a moment before I saw flashes of movement on the hillside above us. Oh, shit. I saw what had her worried. A handful of small golden dinosaurs ran along the hill about 50 yards above us. They adjusted their directions as if they shared the same brain, which made me think of them as a flock. However, they were generally headed to our left, which would take them right past the cave. A strange female voice shouted my name from far away.
Victor! Sheila! Help!
The voice was so unusual it took a second to place it as Trell's. She was always dramatic and intense, but I'd never heard her say anything at that volume. A reply lodged in my throat while my heart rate soared and my adrenaline spiked.
Something's going on back there. We have to help Trell. Run, Sheila!
I took a few half steps to ensure she would follow and then ran faster when she caught up to me. My heart blasted into the red zone as I sprinted that 100 yards. Sheila got a little ahead of me because she had longer legs and better conditioning.
Oh, shit!
I said with shock. Something white ran by my left side like I was standing still. It was about the size of a German shepherd with a meaty 3-foot tail. My first impression was it was related to the green raptors I knew from the beach, but this one was smaller and covered in downy white feathers. More importantly, it didn't stop to eat me. A few seconds later, two other white dino birds ran by, and I snapped one with my IQ to see what we were dealing with. It flashed a picture of the animal's outline and displayed the name. It said, Identification, Dinosaur, Sornitholestes langstoni, female. I knew for sure was that they weren't the same type as the featherless dinosaurs up on the hill, nor were they the same as the sharkman killers from the beach. The bird dinosaurs reached the ramp of the cave well ahead of us, but they ran right by it without pausing. The golden dinos up on the hillside also ran past the cave without stopping.
What the hell is happening here?
I called to Sheila as we both arrived at the rocky area below the entrance of our cave.
Victor, help us! The dinosaurs in the bushes by the ramp!
Galmine called from up in the cave. She wasn't outside, which was good, but I finally saw what made her and Trell scream for help. A member of a third species of dinosaur thrashed wildly in the head-high bushes and small trees just next to the ramp. He was about the size of a horse and had greasy black feathers, a long neck, and crazy long claws. It came across as a strange mix of sloth, bird, and a Tyrannosaurus rex. My IQ tagged him as a male Erlikosaurus. It appeared as if he'd come down the hill from above the cave, lost his footing, and tumbled into the bushes where we now saw him scrambling to get free. Though Trell and Galmine had gone back into the cave, but the ungainly creature flailed and clawed his way in their direction. He was already about halfway there, and he was bulky enough to crush the wood barrier blocking the cave, so I had to take the initiative. Before I could do anything, a couple more white-feathered dinosaurs ran past us, screeching and whistling like they wanted those ahead to wait up for them. Far into the grove, more of the white fast movers ran after the others. Something big was going on down at the lake, and it was coming this way.
We have to stop him from getting into the cave,
I said while breathing heavily. Whatever was going on in the forest, my primary concern was only for the black nightmare at our front door. My pulse quickened at the thought of tangling with something that large, but there were no alternatives. The black dinosaur used his claws to slice through some remaining bushes and made it back to his feet. When he looked down and saw us, he seemed to lose traction on the rocks and slipped a bit. I couldn't read his mind, but it was almost as if he was daring us to stop him from going up the hill. He honked an off-key trumpet roar that sounded more like a cow's than a proper dinosaur.
I will search for a spot to attack it!
Sheila yelled as she jumped into the bushes on the right side of the creature. I ran a few paces to his far side and got into the undergrowth a moment later. I had no idea why the sloth dinosaur was so close to our cave. Maybe it stumbled in by accident. Maybe it smelled Galmine and Trell and wanted a snack. Maybe it needed a new place to live. All I knew for certain is that it had to be stopped. So I moved toward it with my spear in hand. I soon realized the tangled bushes and numerous rocks made it very difficult for the dino to climb up the 30-foot slope. Sheila grunted just as her spear came rifling out of the bushes and into the creature's flank. He trumpeted in shock, but did not fall over dead as I'd hoped. In fact, I had to hop away from his tail because the crazed beast shifted to keep his injured side away from Sheila. It was a behavior I recognized from animals back home, but this wasn't some pet. This was a monster that could rip me in half with a flick of its massive claws.
I was presented with a prime opportunity to chuck my spear into the injured side of the beast, but I couldn't orient the long javelin from inside all the branches. I hovered there for a second, before deciding I was already too close to those claws. "Get out of there, Sheila!" I shouted while letting myself slide a bit off the slope. "I have another idea. I'm going to attack him from above."
"I will try,"
she replied over a constant string of howls from the injured beast. I waited until I saw her run out of the bushes carrying her axe, and